ECH4310 colleagues, Shannon, Clara, Janine, Joyce, and Corinne here. Welcome to our podcast titled Imperfect Allies. Today's discussion will revolve around the topic of allyship, the importance of understanding the social construction of racism, what is allyship, what is performativity, what the problem is with performativity, and finally, ways to be a productive ally. One of the most important aspects of allyship is to actively challenge the preconceived notions that you have and try to unlearn any racist privileges that you may possess. I challenge that Daniel Kelly, Luc Fauchot, and Edward Machary try to achieve in their article. Now, what I think the most important aspect is within this reading is not necessarily what these authors argue as correct, which is the psychological characteristics of racism, but the attempt to explain the unlearning of racism. The point here is that in evaluating these theories of unlearning racism, the authors expose a problem that limits the ability for one to become an ally, not understanding the very basics of racism in society. Racism is a social construct, and in order to become an ally, one must unlearn the psychological explanations that are evaluated by this article. Once this unlearning has been achieved and the social construction of racism can be accepted, allyship can begin.
Thanks for kicking us off, Shanna. Before we delve further into performativity, it is crucial to understand exactly what allyship is. Allyship is not an identity to possess. Allyship is an active role that one upholds. Allyship is continuously evolving in parallel with societal issues, thereby requiring allies to openly receive and integrate feedback, reflect, and have a constant willingness to learn and grow. So why is allyship needed and where does it come from? Black, Indigenous, people of color, BIPOC, are increasingly sharing their lived experiences of racism and racial microaggressions, thereby signaling that racism and discrimination are not a thing of the past and are alive and well in our world today. At the forefront of modern social initiatives is the Black Lives Matter movement, among other related hashtags, walkouts, athlete dissent, and other forms of protest. These uprisings are occurring in demand of positive change for safe and inclusive environments for marginalized communities, and they must not be met with silence. Meeting these protests and social movements in silence demonstrates one's unwillingness to provide support and provide favor to further exclusionary and racist environments. There are varying layers of intersectional issues for BIPOC. In the view of Kimberly Crenshaw, there are many issues surrounding social justice that are frequently overlapping. For example, being a BIPOC woman. Thus the term intersectionality. It is important to recognize that while not everyone falls under multiple categories, those who do can be subjected to multiple angles of discrimination and not just one. Perhaps you may not identify as BIPOC or even as someone who is BIPOC. Perhaps you may not face the same issues that are being identified, but you would still like to lend your support. This is where allyship is born. As an ally, you must understand that lending your support cannot be done by imposing your own view. In the practice of allyship, the most important voices to listen to are those of the ones who are dealing with discrimination at a specific intersection and meeting them there. These people are the authorities on racism and racial microaggression that are occurring. Thus, the direction of movements and action items that are produced by allies in favor of BIPOC must be aimed at amplifying the voices and the lived experiences of those who do not yet have a seat at the table. Allyship is not only important, it is necessary, and I challenge you to stay informed and be aware of what is taking place beyond your circle and see how it impacts others. By understanding why allyship is important and what allyship is, some items you can implement in your life to become a better ally include the following. To read articles written by BIPOC newspapers, social media, and campaign posts. Listen to BIPOC spoken word and podcasts. And finally, to attend rallies, marches, and walkouts.
So because we've now taken some time to kind of discuss the social construction of racism as well as what allyship is, to me the most logical progression would be to kind of discuss performativity and the issues that it presents. So before I dive into performative allyship, I want to share a quote from an article that I recently read that discussed the prevalence of performativity. And so this quote says, "There's a social cost of not saying anything while everyone around you is speaking up." And what struck me the most about this dual meaning of the words saying anything, which I'll get into a little bit in the next few minutes, but for now I kind of want this quote to sit with you while I define performativity. So to get things going, what I'm referring to when I talk about performativity or performative allyship is when anyone from a non-marginalized group outwardly expresses solidarity with or support for a marginalized group, but when they do so, they do it in a way that's not necessarily helpful, nor does it serve to benefit the marginalized group in any way. And at times, these acts have the potential to be harmful to that marginalized group. So more simply said, this occurs when people express support for any cause in the name of some form of reward. So this reward could either be the outpour of social media support that you get from friends, or it could be the pat on the back for being on the right side of social justice. It could also come from simply having to save face to avoid being reprimanded by others for not speaking out at all. So performative allyship often, again, involves public displays of support, namely on social media, and these displays of support have little depth and they often don't really engage with the topic of a given injustice. So these posts will often show that a given person is trying to share that they're not racist or anti-Semitic or even xenophobic. They're trying to show that they have shared values and they support these groups, but they're still not providing any concrete action. So these kinds of posts will often not acknowledge any personal responsibility to potentially earlier complacency. And they seek instead to kind of blame some ominous other who acts as the scapegoat for the systemically oppressive injustices that some groups face. This being said, long-term change isn't something that happens overnight, and lasting change takes time. So posting slogans and hashtags isn't necessarily activism, particularly when it's such a temporary act. And so again, the problems with performativity are plentiful, the primary issue being that this inauthenticity that people are showing does not help to progress the justice-seeking movement in any way, shape, or form. It also excuses people from taking or making the sacrifices required of them if their support had been intrinsically linked for any given movement and was authentic and not extrinsically driven. So ultimately, the reason why performative allyship is so detrimental is because it takes away from what's being said by these knowledgeable experts, all in the self-serving name of upholding an image or seeking a reward. So what any movement wants and what any movement needs are people who recognize the existence of these injustices, and they seek to actively and meaningfully address them over time while also addressing their previous biases and also how they're benefiting from these oppressive systems. And they don't simply stop pushing and going more into activism when the hashtag stops trending. So their support is not wavering when their popularity ends. And so then to circle back to the beginning, when I kind of discussed that silence had a dual meaning within that quote, what I meant by silence is that the silence could be literal, as in you're physically remaining silent, or it could be metaphorical in that your show of support is outwardly expressed for the movement, but what you're supporting and what you're saying is devoid of meaning. So you're not taking a stance, you're not presenting original information, and you're not demonstrating that you care in a real or tangible way. However, what I want to get into, and what one of my co-hosts will get into later on within the show, is how the silence sometimes takes on a third meaning. So the silence can be used to show solidarity when it's more respectful to stay silent and to listen to or learn from these marginalized groups, instead of kind of letting your calls for justice lay emptily after your show of support has served its purpose for you.
Awesome. I agree with the response about the importance of avoiding performative activism. It is crucial that we show more solidarity than allyship. The authors Jeffrey Leonard and Laura Mistumi wrote in Wait, Why Am I Talking?, that being an ally should not be passive. An ally should be more than just words of support, but an ally should be an action. The idea of participating and fighting against the system of white supremacy. To not only show solidarity for BIPOC members, but to benefit everyone that they may live and thrive equally. This being said, it is crucial that BIPOC members are given the opportunity to share their ideas and thoughts. Just like the authors, I 100% agree that allyship spaces can and should only be led by people who have experienced the trauma of racism and oppression. The reason is so that we can amplify Black voices and Indigenous voices. Yes, as an ally, you can show solidarity, but as an ally, it is not your position to lead. This is about allowing racialized folks to create their own table rather than have a sit at the table. For example, we cannot discuss what is good for Indigenous communities when we do not understand their trauma and barriers. Yet what we can do is listen to their ideas and support them in understanding how white supremacy and settler colonialism has had an effect on their people. BIPOC members have done an incredible job at leading anti-racist and anti-oppression initiatives and projects. They hold the key to such amazing resources and knowledge. Therefore, why can't we just continuously support the work that has already been done and support what has already been existent for people to understand the process of fighting systems and institutions founded on white supremacy? The authors also emphasize that allyship is about giving racialized people the opportunity to be at the center. If allies try to make decisions or represent racialized people with or without their presence, then we are repeating the cycles of white supremacy, which is the cycle of control. We cannot allow to take over the spaces of the voices that need to be amplified. We need to make space for those voices to be heard. Therefore, we should not really remove any opportunity to take power or autonomy of their own voices, but we should give them that opportunity to speak up. So it is so essential that we do not repeat these mistakes or reproduce the same attitudes of white supremacy. People who are allies, especially white allies, have benefited so much from the existence of white supremacy, which makes it very hard for them to acknowledge or confront their privileges. So in response to this privilege, Black folks, Indigenous folks, and other people of color should be given the platform to call out on the ignorance and microaggressions. We should make it clear that people who have faced racial traumas should be given all this power and space that they can speak up their minds and they can have the freedom to say what needs to be said. Therefore, centering the voices of the oppressed is very important, and in my opinion, a critical foundation to allyship and solidarity.
To further unpack allyship, we're going to build upon Joyce's points on what it means to be an ally and how important it is to acknowledge that even well-intentioned acts can be detrimental to marginalized communities. Both Joyce and Corinne highlight that even though one can be a self-titled ally, does not necessarily mean that they are making positive strides towards dismantling such inequalities they are claiming to oppose. With this in mind, I'm going to attempt to investigate if there are any alternatives to allyship. But before I do, I want to discuss an interesting study that took place in three American colleges between 2014 and 2017, where researchers conducted 70 in-depth interviews with college students who identified as allies. The researchers found that although many students claim to be allies, many of the students' beliefs and actions reproduced patterns of social inequality. This was done by first assigning responsibility for inequalities to minorities, and second, by suggesting individualized rather than structural remedies for combating unequal systems. The vast majority of students saw allyship as morally right. When it came down to actively participating in the destruction of inequality, many felt it was best to support from the sidelines. On top of this, many of the students suggested that it was important for marginalized communities and individuals to learn from the majority of the population, or that it was enough to be kind and friendly to marginalized groups. The study acknowledges that what some believe to be allyship is really just a symbolic claim. Simply put, it is performative. So how do we overcome the sense of performativity or lack of understanding of what makes a good ally? Is there something else individuals should work towards? This brings me to the concept of an accomplice and co-conspirator. According to Indigenous Action, an accomplice is a person who helps another commit a crime. Similarly, a co-conspirator represents privileged individuals who are actively willing to disrupt and dismantle oppression by putting their privilege, power, safety, bodies, and livelihood on the line. Often these terms are associated with illegal activity, which has been chosen strategically in order to highlight that social justice work is destructive and often deemed illegal by the state. So for example, the Wet'suwet'en railway blockade that happened this past summer. In comparison to an ally, these terms can call for radical action to dismantle injustices, primarily in the form of direct action. To be an accomplice or a co-conspirator means moving beyond guilt and shame and actively trying to challenge a system from which you benefit from. It also means to listen, discuss, and acknowledge our intentions and our contributions on a deeper level, as Joyce mentioned earlier. For some, vocalizing support and being physically present in particular situations is enough to be deemed an ally. However, this can perpetuate inequalities by reproducing destructive behaviors and racist beliefs. Therefore, it may be time to employ the framework of an accomplice or co-conspirator, where individuals take a more active approach by challenging ourselves and structures that contribute to inequality, essentially going beyond the common understanding of allyship.
Thank you all for sharing. I think we all brought forward some really key points to consider when deconstructing the concept of allyship and fostering an understanding of an effective and proper ally. Considering everything we've shared, I would like to leave a final remark on a few tips that I think would help someone transform from an imperfect ally to a perfect ally. For example, taking regular actions to learn and share information, uplift educated and knowledgeable creator and activists, take on uncomfortable conversations to address oppressive ideas, systems, rhetoric, language, etc. that would actively be ignored. If your allyship is only starting because of a prevalent social media or political movement and it slows down as the movement popularity declines, it isn't allyship. If allyship does more for you than the people affected, there may be signs of a larger problem at hand. Keep in mind, transformative movements require commitment. If you are unable to commit to seeing substantive change, the most respectful solution may be to show silent solidarity rather than overcrowding the conversation if you do not have the knowledge to back it up. The best advice we can give you is to think small and work towards addressing local issues. While it may be tempting to condemn federal and national issues and or policies, it is better use of your time to think locally and act globally or nationally. Thank you all for listening, and please let us know in the comments what actions you think create positive allyship. Stay safe out there.